From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of November 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net. Get a broader look at them from Ed Usset, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota, and hear about the soybean crush from Joe Jansen at the University of Illinois. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. We'll do that with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $4.34 1/4. It was up 2 3/4 of a cent. The March at 4.46 3/4, 2 3/4 higher. In May at 4.55 3/4, up 3.5 cents. November beans, 20 cents higher, $11.19 3/4 of a cent, the settlement price. January at 11.34 1/4, up 19 cents. The March up 16.5 at 11.40 1/4. Bean meal futures down 80 cents for the day. The bean oil, $1.16 higher. Wheat futures in a soft red, up 9.5 at 5.43 1/2, and the hard red at 5.31 3/4, up 7 1/4, both of those in the lead December contract. Live cattle futures at $2.52 1/2 cents higher on their settlement price. Feeders up $4.62 1/2, and lean hogs down 67 1/2 cents. Crude oil just about unchanged for the day. Gasoline, $0.06 higher per gallon. It's at $1.91 7/10. Here to talk about these numbers and so much more is Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, hello, Ty. Glad to be here. Very good.
It is a big Monday, relatively speaking, and we used to have lots of moves in the 20-cent mark. Not so many these days, but they're becoming more often, particularly in the soybeans. What happened in that marketplace that pushed it so much higher?
Yeah, these last 2 weeks have been very exciting. The soybeans and the soybean meals led the charge higher in through here. It's a classic, though. There was a lot of producers selling beans off the combine, so they went into commercials' hands. And then over time and through here, we've seen some buying interest. On the day, as far as the beans go, the commodity funds were buyers, about 4,600 soybean contracts going in midday. What we're seeing is just follow through. Usually you see buy the rumor, sell the fact, but there's some coverage that still needs to take place. The trade's sorting out the time window on the purchases, but it looks like there's some fairly large purchases still be had here up front. The overall purchases, there's not been Chinese purchases so far this calendar year until just recently, but however, there were some older purchases are rolling from last crop year to this crop year. So there's ideas there was some purchases on the books, but there's ideas that as we move on forward here, there'll be at least a 5 million metric ton announcement from one of the buying agencies out of Asia on purchases. And that could occur here in this November 5th to November 10th time window. But the market is saying, the market is basically saying, as I mentioned there, that there's some fairly large demand needing to be covered here up front. Seasonally, traditionally, usually, oftentimes, the first 2 weeks of November are firm. But I think I'm going to go with the old adage that maybe the at least the bulls could have Thanksgiving here as long as something's not posted on social media in the middle of the night to upset the apple cart here.
That does sometimes happen more often than not these days than before. I do want to know about soybean sales. I know producers made sales across the scale, and now that's in the hands of commercials. But the question is, for that which they have stored in the grain elevator, and there may be a difference for that which is stored in the bin, should they make additional sales, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, standard answer, everybody's a little bit different, a little bit different situation. I think step one is to sit down and go back in your records or at least look back to see what the cash value was when you took it to the elevator or put it in the bin, what the basis was, what the futures was then versus now. That will give you the idea whether you're ahead or behind on carry and charges and so forth. We've been having guys move gals move, beans here on this up move, and we've been doing replacement in case this thing stays much firmer than expected. Brian split on our technical side of the equation for a long, long time, been pointing out $11 as a swing point. November beans closed 11.19 and three quarters. So if we maintain a move above $11, past history, these beans have run up to $12. So if you do move it, we do like doing a little bit of replacement here so you don't feel like you've missed out on the move here. But the bottom line is push the pencil and see where you are, because we're basically over a dollar from these recent lows here, Todd.
It was a disappointing day for corn, despite the fact that it did settle higher, but only up 2 cents or 2¾ cents compared to the 20 cents that the November bean contract moved higher. What'd you make of that marketplace?
Well, I think of spread activity. Rising tide floats all ships. The soy complex took charge. Bean oil was up over 100 points. They reversed that spread. Meal's been the leader. Meal was down, bean oil up. But I think it's mainly spread activity, buying beans, selling corn, buying wheat, selling a little bit of corn. We heard that maybe there's possibly a little bit of wheat business taking place in the world export market. So that has given the wheat the fundamental catalyst to kind of hang in there. If you look at the wheat chart in through here, we've kind of broken the downtrend line in through here. We're moving up above some moving averages. So as a whole in through here, you look at the technical picture and the fundamental picture here, we're seeing at least the grain market here have a little bit of leg under it.
And finally, USDA did announce that there will be a November crop production report, despite the fact the government is still closed. It was scheduled for next Monday, the 10th, but will come on the 14th. What should we watch?
To answer your question, I think Stone X will be out this afternoon. They did a producer survey, and then of course they'll digest those numbers. Then a lot of these private analysts will be out here to give us the ballpark or the trading range to look at on what to expect on that report. But I would think the bean number would be steady, if not firm. The corn number probably a little lower from the last estimate from the WASD.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media, online on demand at WILLAG.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Some things of note. We are celebrating 40 years of the Closing Market Report and more than 30,000 interviews, 10,000 episodes, and of course the podcast was established 20 years ago, one of the very first and longest lasting podcast, along with Commodity Week. Thank you for listening, of course, at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find today a link to the Farm Assets Conference. It was established in 2014, and to the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And a way to register for both of those are coming up in the month of December. The Farm Assets Conference in Bloomington, that'll be on the 12th day. That's a Friday in December. And then the following Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday will be in DeKalb on the 15th, Peoria on the 16th, and Mount Vernon on the 17th. We hope to see you there, but you need to register right now. Don't wait. Do it today. All the details are on our website at willag.org, or you can find them at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Ed Usset now joins us. He's with University of Minnesota, an agricultural economist there. Hello, Ed. Thanks for being with us. We have a whole lot of ground to cover. First, a nice rally in soybeans again today. There were a lot of I guess, shipments that were released and that we could see, although USDA numbers will start coming out again fairly soon, including the USDA crop production report in November, which generally isn't important, but we haven't had one since September, so that'll be good news, too.
It becomes important if you haven't heard from them.
Yes, it does. So tell me how you received all the news from Asia last week, particularly the 12 million metric tons that apparently needs to be, according to the White House, purchased by the end of this calendar year, and then the other 25 million metric tons that comes in 2026 for soybeans, what that works into the marketplace like.
Well, I guess it's good. We're back to exporting to China. That's a good thing. The timing of these things, 12 million metric tons by the end of January, that's somewhere between 400, 450 million bushels. That's a lot to move, but I think it can be done. You mentioned a 25 million a year for 3 years. And, I never got clear. Is that a calendar year or a crop year? I never felt like that was clarified. And just a little reminder, 25 million metric tons sounds like a lot. Excuse me. Yeah, 25 million metric tons sounds like a lot, but it's less than a billion bushels and not as much as we were doing 2 or 3 years ago. Nothing to sneeze at. I mean, it's a lot of soybeans, but it's not as good as we were doing 2, 3 years ago.
Oh, so we have all those things. So why is it on this news? Is it just excitement that has caused the soybeans to rally? Because it seems like you got news that said, hey, we had zero, but now we have half of what we thought we were going to have for the calendar year. And we're still not sure what USDA did with its WASD figures and the exports to China over time. Because in May, we started talking about this, that it seemed like it didn't take them all out for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I took a fresh look at the balance sheet, and if you put, even the modest export numbers in there, we're going to be cutting in the stocks this crop year, and there's a modestly bullish outlook there. I don't know if it's $1.10 or $1.20 better than it was a month ago. That's the type of rally we've had, and I'm looking at the January contract, and we're still not high priced. We're only high priced relative to where we've been over the last year. $11 or $11.20 January beans is not, it's only good relative to where we've been in the last year.
Well, let me turn your attention someplace else. The FarmDoc team, or at least part of the FarmDoc team, Todd Hubbs at Oklahoma State University now and Scott Irwin from here on campus last week posted an article to the FarmDoc daily website. We'll hear from Todd probably tomorrow on this program about the RFS as it relates to advanced biofuels, particularly the RVOs and RINs related to soybean oil. And I'm wondering whether it's the idea that renewable diesel and FAME diesel or soy diesel is likely to be pushed by 2.5 billion gallons in the next 2 years, maybe two and a quarter in the coming year that's pushing this marketplace.
Mm-hmm. It's helping a lot. What caught my attention a couple of weeks ago, NOPA, the Oil Processors Association, put out a number for the September crush, 10 million bushels higher than expected by the market for September. Like it was 5% over the market expectation. And that's wonderful news. That means this crush is ramping up faster than the market expected. And then I took a deep breath and did a little math. And I said to myself, Todd, what if we exceed our expectations by 10 million bushels every month for a year? Over the course of a year, that would be 120 million bushels in grind, in crush, that we had not expected before. And that, Todd, is 10% of what China imported from us 3 years ago, 1.2 billion bushels. I like the trend. I don't mean to put cold water on it. I like the trend. I like the fact that we're increasing the domestic crush, but it's going to take time it alone will not replace exports quickly.
And you still have the problem that you have a lot of meal with not really a home.
Yeah, although the meal market's up too. So not high, but it is.
Must have a home somewhere.
Must have a home somewhere. I'd love it. People will say, we'll have so much more meal, we'll bring it to landfills. And I'm like, it will not end up in landfills. They'll find a home. They'll find a home.
We will. Thank you much. And we will talk with you again next month.
Okay. Thanks, Todd.
That's Ed Ussett. He's an agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota. Up next, we'll dive into the long-run evolution of the soybean crush with Joe Jansen from the University of Illinois. He's been exploring this concept through a series of articles that are on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. As you'll hear, the ag economist says the research uncovers some interesting changes. When you crush a 60-pound bushel of soybeans, the standard calculation assumes you'll get 11 pounds of soybean oil, 44 pounds of soybean meal, 4 pounds of hulls, and 1 pound of waste. But when Illinois' Joe Jansen looked at the data, he found a slightly different story. Those proportions aren't as fixed as one might think, he says, and the difference is reshaping the nature of soybean demand.
Let's start with our key finding. Waste rates in soybean processing have declined by 44% since the 1960s. We're talking about going from 2.7% waste down to just 1.5% today. Essentially, the industry figured out how to extract a percentage point more value out of every single soybean. This might seem small, but when you're processing billions of bushels, these small improvements add up to significant gains.
Here's the important part of that change. While waste was going down, soybean oil extraction rates were going up.
Not only were crushers wringing more output out of each bushel, but the composition of that output was changing. Back in the mid-1960s, a typical bushel yielded about 18% oil. Today, it's nearly 20%. That means each bushel of soybeans produces about 10% more oil than it did 60 years ago. Importantly, the gains in oil output were larger than the decline in waste, so the composition of the crush was changing.
Now, why does this matter? Well, enter the renewable diesel boom. Starting around 2020, demand for soybean oil as a biofuel feedstock exploded. Now, if you're a soybean processor, you'd like to dial up oil production while leaving meal production fixed. The problem, of course, is that soybeans come in fixed packages. You can't make more oil without making more meal, but the data since 2020 suggests it is possible to extract more of the oil that is already in the bean.
Since 2020, right when renewable diesel took off, soybean oil extraction rates have been consistently above their 60-year trend line. This suggests the market is adapting in real time. The changes aren't huge. Changing the composition of the crush is like turning an ocean liner. It doesn't occur instantaneously. But there is some evidence of a response.
It seems then that the soybean industry may have a little bit more flexibility than the standard board crush margin suggests. When the market conditions change, producers, processors can adapt by tweaking extraction and improving efficiency. It's not instantaneous and it's not unlimited, but it is happening, says Joe Jansen.
So, what does this all mean? First, those standard industry calculations about crush ratios, the one that assume exactly 18.3% oil content, might need updating. It seems that the soybean industry might have a little bit more flexibility than the standard board crush margin suggests. Last, this has implications for farmers, food prices, and fuel markets. When processors can squeeze more oil out of the same amount of soybeans, it changes the economic equation.
The FarmDoc team will explore those potential changes going forward. You may look for them online at the University of Illinois FarmDoc Daily website. Mark Russo now joins us from Everstream Analytics to take a look at the global growing regions. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin in South America. What's your early season assessment of growing conditions for corn and soybeans in Argentina and Brazil?
Yeah, the start of the growing season has been very good across much of Brazil and Argentina. We've seen planting progress generally at a steady pace across most areas, and much of that is due to what's been a good increase in soil moisture during the first kind of 6 weeks of the rainy season. At times, there's been a little bit of irregular rainfall in parts of Brazil, but over small-scale areas rather than anything that large scale. And so with the exception of a few kind of drier pockets here and there, again, the vast majority of summer crop acreage here has enough topsoil moisture for proper germination and establishment.
Do you expect conditions to stay good in the coming couple of weeks?
We do. In fact, the next couple of weeks looks even better compared to recent weeks, as we are seeing a bit more uniform rainfall across Brazil and Argentina, with most summer crop acreage seeing near to above normal rainfall, and then temperatures generally seasonal, if not even a degree or two cooler than average.
Here in the United States, please start in the Southwest, actually in Oklahoma and Kansas, with the hard red winter wheat growing regions, and then we'll work our way through the Corn Belt and the harvest.
Yeah, beginning in the Plains hard red winter wheat belt, they continue to be in good shape with adequate to abundant soil moisture reserves here as planting continues here and begins to be wrapped up across most of the Plains states. While the pattern is drier and warmer here coming up, that's not of any concern. Since moisture is in very good shape. And then across the Midwest corn and soybean belt, as well as the Midwest soft red winter wheat belt, soil moisture here a bit more variable, with some areas such as central northern Illinois and then up north into Wisconsin and Michigan, that's where soil moisture here is a bit limited, which for Midwest soft red winter wheat, that is a concern here as a crop that has just been planted here gets established before going dormant. So that's really the only area of note in terms of detrimental weather. With corn and soybean harvesting here wrapping up, this drier pattern is will continue to be quite favorable.
I know most of this will be a spring-based function, but do you see during the winter months enough precipitation gathering to alleviate any of the drought conditions, particularly in central Illinois and parts of the Midwest?
We do. We think there will be opportunities to improve over the winter. The big question is it more in liquid form or is it in frozen form here coming up? But the overall setup for this winter, which does look to feature similarities as last winter with more variable temperatures and opportunities for precip, that looks to be in place this week or this winter. And the one thing also to note is that last year some of the driest conditions were biased up north, including the northern half or so of the Midwest. This year is looking a little bit different, with at least more opportunities for precip, both rain and snow here in the overall setup.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo with Everstream Analytics. He joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.